the tide.
Leaving the scrapyard behind, the watchful gaze of the proprietor, still presumably keeping an eye out on you, well, you assume, but not looking back to check. Empty-handed, with the exception, the quite important exception, of this rolled-up manila envelope, which I think you've, like, tucked in the back of your trousers and put your shirt over. It's pretty much invisible there, flat as it is. You've made it out with Morgan. You've shown him what it looks like, looked over these photographs of Ian, as well as the timetable in this strange cursive. Morgan says,
that's as close to confirmation as I think we're going to get. This person was spying on Ian.
Yeah, I mean, in the same envelope, there's a schedule.
Yeah.
I don't think that was this person's schedule.
You think it was Ian's?
Stands to reason if someone was following him around.
You're saying this was deliberate? Somebody targeted him?
I don't know what to think, Morgan. All I can say is that enough people have been involved in keeping this something quiet that I'm not willing to put anything off the table.
God. Okay, and no clues as to whose car it was?
No. At first I thought maybe this is their schedule, so maybe we could track it or figure out, like, oh...
Here, let me have a look at that.
Who has lunch at 12 o'clock, you know? Everyone.
Every fucker. You pass it over to Morgan. I forgot it was an audio medium. we did the mime.
Yes.
But you pass it over to Morgan, who quickly kind of scans over it and says,
yeah, look. 5:15, leaves tannery. Yeah, this is Ian's.
But why?
Well, this is the thing. Nobody knew him. I don't know why anyone would in this town would target him. He was a stranger, like us.
And not only that, it's not like he... I mean, I loved him, but... I mean, he was a barista, Tanner.
He was
an apprentice.
I know what you mean. He wasn't important.
Well, I didn't want to say it. In this context, though. Like, in this context of following someone around, in this context of... this...
I don't understand. I'm... You don't think this had something to do with me and him? I mean, we didn't go around telling people, but we also didn't hide it.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know this town. I don't tell people as a matter of course. That's just me.
That's why you broke up. Right? He said something about that.
Yeah, I sort of should to think what you've heard about me. Yeah, that's why. That's why I came to apologise. I didn't want him to think that I was ashamed of him. You got to understand that I'm a teacher. People are very sensitive. The only other person I knew who was gay on my teacher training course went on placement, and when the kid's parents found out he was gay, he called the police. They investigated him because of just some stuff this parent had said. That's enough in a community, you know? Like this community.
I know.
I got taken to the police station. Everyone treats me different now.
I understand. I do understand.
Ian didn't. I won an award to the young teacher thing.
Morgan raises his eyebrows.
You know, you jump through certain hoops. You get nominated. I got sent to a good school. But no one at work knew. I hadn't told anyone. I kept thinking of testing the waters, you know. Get to know a colleague well enough. Maybe tell him and see how they would react. See how what they thought would happen. It just never came up. So when this big evening comes up and I'm going to be in front of a crowd and I get a plus one and my head teacher's there. Half the staff are there. And there was Ian. I told him about it, but I never explicitly...
He decided to come. Yeah, that sounds like him.
I froze up on stage. And I was just scared. Afterwards, I went a little bit off the handle at him in the corridor. And he left. And we didn't talk after that.
You're kind of walking along the street as you're discussing this. I think you had it in the general area of the hospital, but it's going to take you a little while to get there. You walk for a minute or so in silence. You're kind of lost in your thoughts, and Morgan visibly kind of processing what you're telling him. And he says, finally,
"You came here to apologize. That's not all, though, right? It's okay. You can be honest. It doesn't really matter now, but you didn't know about me."
No. No, I mean, I didn't have any illusions. It had been over a year. I hadn't imagined that he'd moved on, but, like, I had imagined that maybe he wouldn't want to know.
You hoped he would. You hoped you could get him back?
At the very least, I hoped I could tell him. And yeah, of course. I'd have been stupid not to hope.
The thing is, I think it probably would have worked.
What do you mean?
Your grand gesture. It sounds like exactly the sort of thing he would go for. Oh, Christ. I mean, I loved him. He really liked me. But it was so early, and... Why, he did talk about you. Here and there. I worried. Stupidly, but I did. He didn't tell me everything that you just told me, but I sort of heard his side of it as well. But I think you broke each other's hearts.
I think I did that for both of us.
Yeah.
It wasn't Ian's fault. And, I mean, he landed on his feet.
He waves you away.
Rubs his eye. Doesn't matter now.
It might. Like you say, you got this feeling that he's still with us. And there's hope.
What's your plan for the hospital, exactly?
This is tough.
It's tricky. Because what have you got to go on?
We know the name... No, we don't. We know the name of the brother.
Yes.
Of the patient. We know he's ill. And that's about it. I can't think that he's going to be sort of under guard, but it's going to be difficult finding him. I think I might go see if I can find a corner shop, buy a card.
There is actually like a little gift shop visible, like attached to the hospital. You've approached at this point. It's a big old concrete slab of a building with an NHS sign out front. Not a very pleasant place exactly, but presumably it gets the job done. And there is a little gift shop in one corner.
Yeah, I'm thinking of buying some grapes, a card, maybe some flowers, and, you know, saying they're from Errol.
All right, sounds good.
Saying I've got gifts from Errol for his brother. He's not able to get here, but do you know where he is?
Okay, fantastic. Well, I think we can resolve that neatly in a little roll.
Sounds good.
We'd have to roleplay, you know. You presumably get passed between a few different receptionists as you go through a few different wards.
Yeah.
We can resolve that all in one, I think. If you want, you can spend a plot point for a flowers and card asset that you could use here and maybe in the rest of the scene.
Let's go.
Might come up.
Gifts asset.
Yeah. Gifts D6.
Gifts D6, cool.
Nice. I will roll your difficulty for you. I don't think this is going to be impossible by any means, you know? Holy moly. So your difficulty there was 3d6. I rolled a 6 on one of them and a 1 on the other two.
Oh.
Giving you two opportunities. So if you want to, you can spend one plot point to step something down twice.
Yes, please. Oh, absolutely.
A golden opportunity.
I could just clear my head wound.
Yes, absolutely you could.
Or I could bring my afraid down to a d4.
Yep, so if you bring something down to a d4...
Yeah, the d4 to me.
And then it's gone after that. The first time you use it.
Now, it is just thematically appropriate for me to get rid of a head wound in a hospital.
It's pretty funny.
But I would like to get rid of this d8.
It's also not how hospitals work, right? No, you don't walk through and go, I feel better.
Yeah, I think I'll step down my afraid to a d4.
Sounds good.
I'm feeling pretty good about this.
You've got a plan in mind. You've got evidence. You've got all sorts of things. And I think actually, as your memory gets further and further away from the B&B and the night that you just spent there, I think it makes sense that you're afraid would naturally come down.
And my puzzle brain's engaged.
Yes.
It's gone from like, now I've got evidence, now I've got, you know, this something that I could even present the police and they'd scratch their head.
Yes. Go ahead and construct the dice pool to beat my 6, because that's all I've got.
Gonna try not to. So I've got to add a d4. Because I've got the afraid d4.
Yes. And you've got gifts d6.
I've got gifts d6, so we'll add that too. I've got the d8 for hating... No, this is a sucker for the dramatic.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
You've got a whole scheme going on. I don't think Morgan can offer any meaningful help here. This is not... just looking at his stats, I don't think this is his skill set.
2d6, 2d8, and a d4. Hopefully. I can create better than a 6 on that.
I mean, if you're confident, and I know you never are, but if you are, you could even hinder... get yourself another plot point and trade out your distinction for a d4.
I don't want to be rolling 2d4 here.
Fair enough.
I'm a little shaken already.
Yeah, fair enough.
The gift rolled a hitch.
Amazing.
But other than that, I can happily make a 12.
Great.
Or is that, would that be a heroic
success? That's a heroic success, yeah.
So that steps up my effect dice.
It does.
So that means that my d6 effect dice with one hitch would go up to a d8.
Good stuff. So a heroic success, you earn yourself another d6 hero die, pop that in your pool. But you did get a hitch, of course. So I'm going to go ahead and step something up. Let's do head wound d8. I think you're really starting to feel the burn on that one. But the good news is you can clear afraid. Leaving you with what complications?
So I've got head wound d8, paranoia d10.
Fantastic. Well, not for you, but...
No.
Nonetheless, a success is a success, so you are able to connive your way through the hospital corridors off to the sort of surgery outpatient ward where you are reliably informed that Blaine Dillman is recovering from his recent replacement. When you're shown to his bed, the family resemblance is immediately clear. Blaine is the slightly less fit of the two, the slightly more stocky, but also a little bit more hardened as well. His skin is weathered and his eyes are a little dull. The nurse kind of brings you over and says, Mr. Dillman, somebody, well, these two young gentlemen are here to see you. And Blaine looks up and squints in not immediate recognition. What do you do?
Freeze for a second. Say, hello, Mr. Dillman. Your brother told me that you weren't feeling well, so I thought I'd bring some grapes for you.
All right. Sorry, have we met?
We haven't. Not as yet. Actually, new in town. But I heard that you and your brother were the people to talk to about certain things that me and your brother have been discussing, and I thought I'd come to you as well.
The nurse kind of looks between you and says, "Well, I'll leave you to it. Let me know if you need anything, Mr. Dillman." And Blaine sort of nods at her as she goes and looks over to you and to Morgan and then over to the grapes and the card and the flowers, laying it on a bit thick, aren't you?
Yeah, admittedly.
What's so important?
I've got some questions I need answering, and I'm not gonna bullshit you. It's very important to me, or I wouldn't be here.
Alright, fire away.
I want to ask you about a certain car that came through your garage.
We get a lot of cars.
I'm sure you do. This one, although I think you probably already know what I'm talking about, is a Ford Mondeo Brown.
Hmm.
You remember such a thing?
Son, I've probably seen half a dozen Ford Mondeos in the last year.
This one will be in the last couple of weeks.
Maybe. He seems reluctant to initially kind of give you the you know, the leeway to ask these questions. So I think probably a dice roll is going to be appropriate.
Okay, this is how I want to pitch this. I think there's going to be a little lean here. Russell's going to say it's in connection with a car accident that the police were asking about. I'm going to kind of raise the stakes very slightly.
Sure.
Try and make it sound a little bit like I'm asking in more of an official capacity than perhaps I am.
Yes.
But not at any point.
Not
say
lying.
I'm with the
exactly,
police.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll roll your difficulty for you. Another opportunity if you want it.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'm going to get rid of that paranoia. Or not get rid, but step down.
Step it down one.
Paranoia. Okay. So I've got three dice here. I've got to beat in.
You got to beat a 9.
A 9.
I can give you one from Morgan if you'd like some help, but Morgan is probably just giving you cunning d6.
Let's not forget my gifts d6.
Of course.
I'll take Morgan's cunning.
Okay.
So we'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
Hey. Cool.
Any hitches?
No hitches at all.
I didn't know you knew how to do that.
I didn't know how to do that, but we're experimenting here. I have 12.
Okay.
And a d10 effect die.
Yeah, with a d10 success, then Blaine will probably more or less just spill his guts here. He's going to say, yeah, I know that one. I know what you're talking about. I thought there was something wrong about it when he brought it in. He looked shifty and
big human shaped dent in the bonnet.
We don't really ask. It's not our policy to ask questions.
And I don't blame you.
You haven't even really want anything for it, though. That was the big thing. Normally, somebody would try to wheedle out getting some money off of it. I mean, it's true, the scrap heap pays us a little bit for each car, but not a lot. Usually, they try to cut us in on the deal. Especially in this case, there was nothing else wrong with it. Could have buffed it out. I mean, listen, doesn't take a genius to figure it out. When I read the paper, you know, saw it in the mirror.
Yeah, didn't get much of a headline, though. Still.
Guess not.
Take some nous to put two and two together.
Yeah, maybe. You knew him. That's what you're saying.
I did.
Well, I'm sorry.
Who brought it in?
If I tell you, what are you going to do?
You have to understand, I already know some things about that accident. I will be asking questions no matter what, but I can leave your name out of it.
What about your friend there? His eyes slide over to Morgan, and he says, he looks about ready to fly off the handle. And you look over to Morgan, and he does kind of, he's shaking a little bit. His emotions kind of getting the better of him in this moment.
No, he feels.
Morgan just says, don't worry about me, I'll be fine. Blaine sort of sits back, rests his head against the pillow. It was Gaz Walsall.
Gaz Walsall, that must be the son out of Tommy Walsall and son then.
Blaine nods. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's no wonder nobody at the cafe saw anything, eh?
Don't know anything about that. I wasn't there. I was at the garage.
What do you know about him?
Who? The dad or the son?
Both of them.
He bought the cafe right out of university, I think. Came back home. Started his family.
Had a bit of money then.
A little bit. It was different back then. It wasn't. It's nice now. But he and his wife had some difficulty. I think she moved away a decade back.
Oh.
Gaz is 17. He's a quiet kid. Nervous. But I've never seen him like he was on that day.
You know, would you say you know them well? Do you speak to them frequently?
No. No, not really.
Gaz Walsall, in his vehicle, had photographs of the person he hit on that evening.
Blaine's eyes kind of dart left and right. There are a few people here in the ward, and he's clearly visibly worried about like somebody overhearing what you're saying, and he says, "Yeah, I don't know anything about that."
But you seem worried that someone does.
Listen, you're welcome to ask whatever questions you like, but you don't really know. Anyone could be listening.
What are you afraid of, Blaine?
I don't know, but
If people hear that you've been asking about the Walsalls, people like them. They're a community leader, in a way.
I see. I got that feeling.
You'll leave my name out of this.
Won't pass me lips.
Is that all?
Gaza's car. Did you find anything else before it went to the scrap heap?
Nothing much. There was a, under the chair, there was like a book, like a paperback. I gave it back to him the other day, actually.
You remember what it was?
Some kid's book. He probably hadn't read it in ages, but he had his name in the corner.
Right.
If that's everything, I'm gonna get back to convalescing.
Thanks, Blaine.
He gives you a dark look. He's clearly worried about what this might lead to down the road.
I lean over, I bring the grapes to the bedside table and prop the card up unsigned and say, "You got nothing to worry about." In my most convincing, like, freaking the fuck out voice.
Yeah, it didn't take much, but you managed it. Okay, you leave the hospital. It's coming up to about 4 o'clock now in the afternoon. Morgan sort of nudges you on the way out and says, "So it was the cafe kid."
It was the cafe kid.
Why?
Remains to be seen. I got more questions than I got answers. Like, this was a 17-year-old kid's car. Why is he writing in loopy cursive? I've seen more plain handwriting in the Doomsday Book.
I don't know, maybe he had handwriting classes as a kid because he couldn't do his essays properly. For example.
For example.
What's going through Russell's head as you're leaving, presumably head back towards the waterfront?
I mean, this is almost bloody-minded, right? This feels like a kind of classic kid's done something stupid, daddy'll clear it up for him.
Mm.
You know, there's...
The thing is, that's probably what you would think if you had a reason to believe this was an accident.
Exactly. Outside of the supernatural, outside of this this world that me and Morgan have almost constructed for ourselves to explain the unexplainable, that's what Russell would be angry about.
Yeah.
It's a societal, a simple social anger. However, there is this feeling that, you know, everyone in this town, like how frightened Blaine was. It's like there's a structure to everything. Like they've all been, it's like that one episode of The Next Generation where everyone's got worms in their heads.
Pulling for that specialty at all costs.
Do the listeners know I've got a Star Trek specialty?
I actually don't think they do yet. They might never.
Where everyone is keeping shtum and misdirecting away from the truth. It doesn't just feel like a "we don't talk about that" situation. And so, yeah, the only real response is fight or flight, and somehow Russell's chosen both.
So Morgan was asking, are you going to the cafe to confront Gaz? That's clearly what he's like ready to do. Like he's almost like sort of his hands are kind of balled up into fists. He's ready to deal out some justice of some sort or another. What does Russell want to do?
I've still got paranoid D6.
You do?
And I think that's manifesting in a sort of they live style. Fight, flight, or freeze.
Mm-hmm.
Russell doesn't know who to trust and doesn't trust that if he walks into that cafe and starts accusing this 17-year-old of killing someone, that Russell isn't going to end up in the same place as Ian or behind bars.
Yeah.
Because everyone could be in on it. Everyone could be part of this. The police certainly don't seem inclined to look into this. So without actually knowing what's going on, it's hard to want to feel like we have any power here. It's walking into the belly of the beast with absolutely no plan beyond saying, "This is what I know, I'm a problem."
Yeah.
And at the same time, Russell wants to kick over every table in that in that cafe. I don't believe this is the end of the story. And that's what Russell says to Morgan. Russell puts his hands on Morgan's shoulders, clearly aware that he's looking into the wild eyes, and says, I don't believe this is the end of the story.
With your hand on his shoulder, Morgan has a sharp intake of breath. He looks up at you and he says,
You're right. I mean, there's still Emerson. There's still the dreams. There's still whatever the hell's going on at your B&B. And we don't know why this kid would do it. I think we've got to see what happened that day.
Yeah. At the very least, we can find out where they took Ian.
All right.
So?
You want to wait to try and rent it?
Today? Talk to Emerson. See what Ian was up to here. Find out. I mean, I feel like I'm a character in a crime drama. Find out if he knew something. If Ian knew something he shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, I can't imagine what that would be.
Same. But like, you don't have to be looking for knowledge to find it.
I wonder if when we dream, we'll dream together.
No.
And what that'll do.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll get separate dreams, but we'll be in the same place, so...
Two chances at braving the mist.
That fucking mist.
Yeah, I know.
The sky as well. Have you ever looked up at the sky in that place?
It's dark.
It's...
There's no stars.
Yeah, but there's something more. I need to have a proper look. There's something about the quality of the air up there. I don't know. But you're right. We should talk to Casey. Actually, how about you do that? I'll scope out this place.
All right.
See if I can find us a proper way in, see if the door's locked, anything like that.
If you like.
Yeah, I've got D6 stealth. Should be fine.
I mean, yeah, same.
Fair enough.
There's a set of metal stairs down by the corner shop.
Yeah, yeah, I'll find them.
And I'll do my leaning against a wall thing.
So you split off for the next few hours at least. You're going to have to wait a little while because you don't know exactly when it is that Casey's going to show.
But I wait on a nearby bench near the waterfront, which is where the chip shop is, right?
Yes.
You know, watching the road approaching.
Yeah.
That he would naturally walk down along the seafront.
It's almost a straight shot. Like, from the cliffs, mm-hmm. You can kind of see... I mean, up there, it's much more of a, like, jaggedy, kind of uneven road. But it's pretty much unbroken, sort of like, coming down to the waterfront.
Switches back up there, yes. on the cliffs, but here, it's the seafront, right?
Exactly.
The main road of the town would be the road along the seafront.
Yeah.
So I sit, looking over the beach, and my arm stretched out to the side, looking along the road, keeping my eye out for someone.
Time passes. The sun begins to set, disappearing behind the cliffs that surround King's Tide on all three sides that aren't open to the sea. Although it's more of a curve. It's that bowl shape that I kind of described beforehand. And just as the sky is sort of properly darkened, you can see a figure beginning to make their way slowly across the waterfront towards you, kind of creeping towards you almost. It's you know, you notice them from quite a distance, and so you have to wait a full kind of 10 minutes as they get closer and closer and closer. He's not a very fast walker. He's almost kind of limping or shuffling, maybe. But it is him.
From his description, at least.
Well, there's that. But also you recognise him. Because you've seen him before. He is the fella who was standing outside the police station.
Oh, yeah.
Holding an umbrella. It was just yesterday, in fact, that you saw him. Kind of watching as you went inside. And caught a glimpse of him then, but it is indisputably the same person. He's got a newspaper tucked under his arm. He walks in. Grab some fish and chips.
Does he see me on the way in, or has he clocked me?
I want to ask for a notice roll. Cool. To see if you can see whether he sees you.
Okay.
You've got an 8 to beat.
Okay. I've got D8, D10, D6. I've got notice, wits, I think.
Yep,
and,
absolutely.
D8, hating an unanswered question.
Yeah.
So that's a 10 with a D8 effect die.
So yes, you see him. He does see you. and there is an immediate kind of recognition in his eyes as well as in yours. There is something else in his reaction as well. His pace kind of speeds up ever so slightly, but then he ducks into the chip shop. He doesn't look back at you while he's in there. Are you going to go over to the wall and stand there to meet him when he comes out?
No, I think when it comes to it, you know, I had this idea of like being this mysterious person, but having seen him, knowing that he's seen me, and knowing he's seen me before, I think there's an anxiety that he's seen me going into being taken into the police station. And this old man is going to think that, like, this criminal is waiting for him outside.
Sure, sure.
So I stay on the bench, and then I pick up my chips, which were kind of sprawled out to make sure that nobody sat next to me.
Yes.
I pick up my chips, leaving space, and then I wait for him to come out, and I'm going to sort of acknowledge and nod and say hello to him once he comes out.
Inviting him to kind of sit with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't mind, you know, I'll get up and walk with him if
sure.
he doesn't want
no,
to.
No, no. Actually, yeah, when he comes out, he sees you, sees the space you've made for him and sees you kind of gesture, and he comes over, sort of carefully. He lowers himself down next to you and pops the newspaper that he was, like, carrying, just pops that down between you and unrolls his fish and chips. He's gone for a smaller portion than you, but he begins to eat. He doesn't seem to want to be the first one to say something.
Mr. Emerson?
Yes?
My name's Russell. I believe we have a mutual friend.
No, I think you're mistaken.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't know Ian?
I'm sorry, I think you might have me confused for somebody.
That's strange, because you attended his funeral.
Oh, the funeral, I remember the funeral. He has that kind of a lilt in his voice that, kind of despite his age, kind of comes out crystal clear, but with like a little bit of, you might say kind of crackle to the voice. Something there, and he's always like looking just past you when he's talking.
Not in a sort of grace way.
No, it's quite different. He forces you to lean in to hear him, so quietly is he and softly is he speaking.
Yeah,
but he says, "Yes, the funeral. That's poor young man. I read about the accident in the paper. I was just passing, and I felt compelled to go and say something. That's all."
To go and say something?
Foolish, I suppose, but I... Yes.
What would you have to say?
Just to offer my condolences. So young, so... I don't know. I'm sorry. I really must go.
Please. Do I... Like... I don't feel like I'm getting the full truth here.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Not with a paranoid D6.
I'm going to ask you for another notice roll, I think.
Another notice roll? Okay.
Yeah,
let's do it. My notice is a D6.
11 to beat.
All right, well, I've got a D10, a D6, and a D8.
Okay.
Trying to get 11?
11, well, you want to get 12, yes.
I want to get 12. Oh, God, that's really difficult.
Hmm.
I can double my skill die. By getting an afraid D6.
Sure. Another notice wouldn't be too bad.
Well, I've only got 6 on notice.
Oh, is it only a 6?
Yeah. So that's probably not going to happen, is it? That probably doesn't make it worth it. No, we're just going to roll. We're just going to see.
Oh, do me a favour. Add speed reading.
Okay. Mysterious.
Well, what can I say? I'm feeling nice. Did you hitch on speed reading?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
However, I've got a 12 exactly.
Oh, very nice.
With a D6 effect die.
Yeah, let's spend that hitch to put you back up to paranoid D8.
That tracks.
You earn a plot point for that. There's something off-putting about Casey's demeanor. He doesn't exactly seem on the level, but it's difficult to put your finger on exactly why. But for some reason, you recognize some element of it as almost like a mirror to yourself. There's something familiar in his look. But that's not why I asked you to pop speed reading into the dice pool there. That was because...
What's the date of the newspaper he's reading?
Great question. November 3rd, 1901. And tempted as I am to end the episode on precisely the same cliffhanger as I ended the first episode, I'm going to keep us moving here. I wonder if you're going to ask him about it. He is sort of making an effort now to roll up his fish and chips and begin the trudge, presumably the fairly long trudge, back up to the weather station.
Have you had the dreams too?
He widens his eyes and he says, "You don't see. I'm sorry." And gets up and begins practically running away from you.
I follow at a brisk walk, because he's not fast.
He's not fast, but he sort of turns back and he says, "Please, please, just leave me be. I'll call the police."
"There's nothing to be afraid of. Not from me."
"You don't know."
"We can help each other."
"No."
"We can."
"Please, just don't listen to the dreams. Get out of here. Get out of Kingstide, both of you."
"I can't. And if that's what you think, then that means you can't either, because otherwise you'd be gone. The best we can do is stick together."
"Everything all right?" Genie pops out of the fish and chippy. You whirl around to see her sort of poking her head out of the golden light door. And she sort of squints at the two of you. "Oh, Mr. Cauldron, everything okay there?"
"Oh, yes. I was just asking Mr. Emerson if he was finished with his paper."
She sort of looks between the two of you and says, right you are. Everything okay, Casey?" Casey stammers. Thank you, Patricia." And Jeannie heads back into the fish and chippy, begins serving another customer. You can still hear her, but she's at a distance now. And Casey leans in on the street and says, "Listen here, Mr. Cauldron, please, just do as I say, and nobody else has to be hurt. Leave. Don't come back. Forget about all of this. I'm sorry for your loss." And he turns and begins to leave.
"Are you finished with the newspaper?"
He freezes in place. I don't think he responds, though. I think he keeps walking on. But you have the date.
"That's fine. It's just another trip to the cellar."
It's probably about half an hour later. You've managed to finish off your own food, get your own thoughts in order. Morgan comes out to meet you on the waterfront there and says, "Any luck?"
"It's just like the rest of them. Well, not quite like the rest of them. He's scared. I mean, they're all scared. Everyone here is scared. But no, I think he's had the dreams too."
"Really?"
"He told me not to listen to them. He told me that if I leave, then no one else has to get hurt, which is as much a threat as it is anything else."
"Yeah, I don't like the sound of that at all."
"I was hoping he'd be able to shed some light on this. I know it's a bit stereotypical to hope that a scientist who lives in a weather station might be able to give me a lowdown on what's going on, but..."
"Yeah, I wouldn't hope for too much. He can probably tell you about the tide, but that's about it."
"I mean, the weather's been... apparently the weather's been pretty shit."
"Yeah. Yeah, that's true, actually."
"Do you know what? I'd have taken that level of conversation. I would have taken a conversation about the weather. Over what I got."
"Well, I have some good news for you. The apartment upstairs, it's not locked."
"Not at all?"
"Well, not anymore."
"Morgan."
"Russell."
"I am surprised. And not in a negative way."
He gives you maybe your first smile. And he says, Alright. No time to waste, I suppose."
"Yeah. I mean, if it's not locked and no one's paying attention to the back, saves us waiting to the cover of night to break in. We are going to need to sleep in there."
"Yeah?
I should have brought a coat, really, or something.
There's a bed.
There is?
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough. Well, do you want to take the bath, or should I?
He gives another little sort of quirk of the mouth, and he says, all right, come on. He leads you up the stairs, keeping a lookout, but there doesn't seem to be anybody around. The corner shop's closed. I mean, it's gone 8 o'clock now, so everything in Kingstyde is closed. Nobody seems to notice. Even as the metal stairs, they seem to be sort of ringing out with every step. Up to the door, which Morgan creaks open, lets you in. It is pretty damp in here, kind of dusty, unpleasant, really. Not, you know, this place would need some work if you were gonna live here. And from what Jeannie told you, it's been unoccupied for quite some time. But there is a bedroom off to one side, window out looking over the seafront, the cafe just below you.
Tiptoeing, well, not tiptoeing, like doing soft footfalls everywhere, yeah, so as not to alert anyone in the cafe below that there's someone up here.
Yeah. As far as you can tell, the cafe is unoccupied. You did walk past it. It seemed to have closed at some point, and you didn't see anyone in there, but you are still... Maybe they have an apartment, like, behind it or something. It's, you know, all the same. You and Morgan are kind of whispering everything that you say while you're in here, fully aware that this is full-on trespass. And not only trespass, but trespass in which you intend to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Remain unconscious.
We're squatting.
Morgan says, should we... No, that's dumb.
Go on.
Should we barricade the door?
I mean, I don't know. It might be quite loud, but... If we do it together, maybe we can lift something in front just to make it seem like it's locked.
Sure.
Someone just came up and checked.
There's a bookcase, I think. An empty bookcase.
In the chest height? Room.
Yeah. Good enough to prop in front of the door, and we'll do what you've suggested. Make it seem like it's going to be locked when it's not. All right. He sort of pauses awkwardly. There's a moment, and it passes. And he says, I'll go to the bath.
I mean... Can hang out if you want.
Let's get this over with.
Alright.
See you in there.
Hope so.
And after a little while of trying to get used to this bed that nobody slept in quite some time.
Presumably no covers or anything, no pillow.
No, it's not. Yeah, nothing. Not comfortable. There is a mattress, but yeah, it's slightly stained.
Bunch of my shirt, yeah, my long shirt, and use it as a pillow.
Yeah, it's the best you've got.
Sort of obviously get rid of the rest of my clothes.
Sure.
Because they're going to be soaked.
Yeah. You're having done this twice now.
Yeah.
You begin to feel what Morgan must feel, getting used to the practicalities of waking up like that.
If I'd have thought about it, I'd have brought an extra pair of underpants.
But after a little while of listening to cars go by and the waves crashing and coming in, you finally... fall asleep. Thank you for listening. For more information, visit tide.show.